News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 16th of January, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you all kinds of news, views, stuff you can use, and maybe we'll even take a few questions. You never know. We're going to start with the news today, and we're going to start with Steve, because he seems so eager. Oh, he was asleep. But even so, we're going to start with Steve.
Been a rough night.
I don't want to know.
Yes. Some of the rumors have finally come to fruition, and there are no longer rumors in the Apple world. At the Macworld trade show last week, Steve Jobs unveiled several new products, including iLife 05, a new version of their media applications. iPhoto can now do more slideshow effects, have folders. iMovie now does HD. It's one of the first consumer-level HD video editors. iDVD 5 has new themes in it as well. You can now burn directly from your camcorder. If you just want to take a video, put it onto a DVD, come from your camcorder straight to iDVD. GarageBand 2 is now an 8-track recording studio. You can record 8 tracks live at the same time. Some really slick stuff. They also introduced a new package called iWork, which is a combination of their previous Keynote program, which has been updated with more themes and new whiz-bang type of stuff, and a new program called Pages, which is almost an InDesign, PageMaker, Quark Express type program for page layout. The neat thing there is that the new iWork package is $80, including Keynote and Pages. Keynote used to be $100 all by itself, so its price got dropped in half. The iPod Shuffle is the much-anticipated flash-based iPod. 512 meg flash drive for $99. New version of iTunes will pick your favorite songs or songs you've never heard of and automatically fill into your library. 1 gig version for $250. And the hotly anticipated $500 Mac finally came out, the Mac Mini. 2 inches tall. It's smaller than everyone had any hopes of seeing. Starts at $500 for 1.25 gigahertz, 40 gig drive. I personally have a Cube, Mac Cube, which was the previous smallest computer. The new computer is now a quarter the size, a quarter the price, and 4 times faster than my Cube was. Very hotly anticipated.
Can't beat that.
Yeah. Oh. One of the odd things that that we're seeing in the Mac world, at least, is there's no keyboard, no mouse, and there's no monitor, so it's not an all-in-one computer like the iMac and eMac. It's targeted at Mac users who are upgrading, already have a keyboard, mouse, and monitor, and Windows switchers who already have a keyboard, mouse, and monitor.
So it'll take a regular VGA...
regular VGA monitor, right. USB keyboard and mouse, no PS2. It comes with a DVI digital video connector, so you can plug in the big widescreen digital flat panel monitors, but also a VGA adapter for any standard VGA CRT or LCD.
It sounds awfully cool, and we'll see.
Cool.
You know, one of the things that people have complained about with Macs is that while they're incredible technology, they're so danged expensive. So we'll see if, in fact, this this leads people to turn around.
Right. A lot of that is a misnomer because of all the extra stuff
Apple throws
in. So now $500, you get all the media programs. You get this 8-track digital audio recording software, high-definition video editing software, all built into the $500 Mac.
Well, it ought to be a barn burner, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
On to... Dave.
Okay, AMD evidently is going to start putting 3D hologram labels with their hardware because there's a company in Taiwan that has been illegally producing these chips and trying to sell them as AMDs. So they're going to throw in this hologram to make sure that you know that it is authentic. Let's see, on the other end of the world here, as we told you before, there's really no new chips coming out this year from either Intel or AMD. But what they are going to do on their current chips is increase the cache. to give you more space, you know, to move things around and everything else on that end of it.
In terms of hardware, it's except for the new Mac stuff, it's going to be a really boring year.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, well, this gives a chance for the video companies and the software people to finally catch up to the hardware.
Right.
Because for the longest time right now, hardware has been outpacing software.
Well, but that's been the only saving grace of companies like Microsoft.
Yeah.
Whose software runs so slow on slower systems, you really need a super fast machine to
exactly
to run it.
And now, like I say, some of these other gamers and everybody else is going to be able to finally catch up, maybe, right, at least for this year, but with the additional cash, that's going to throw a little fly in the argument.
A faster cache can make your CPU seem faster, even though the
depends on what you're doing.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then the other thing out there is they're saying spam has stabilized. I don't quite figure this out because they were saying the volume of spam for the previous 3 months was at about 66%. And right now, at least for the past 2 months, it's stabilized out at 67%. To me, that's still an increase.
Yeah, right.
But only 2 out of 3 messages are spam now. It hasn't gone up any.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that nice?
It is starting to cut back a little bit, so that's good news for the folks trying to filter that out. But if you use Foxfire or Netscape, you should be in good shape.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. The voice.
They would rather do their show in a chat room. It's Sound Bites with Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. A little more news and then to the phones. On the Microsoft front, a set of video files available on peer-to-peer networks is piggybacking on Microsoft's anti-piracy tools to trick viewers into downloading adware and spyware. Yes, it's piggybacking on the anti-piracy tools to download spyware. There are several companies apparently using Microsoft Media Player's digital rights management tool to fool people into downloading spyware and viruses. Microsoft responded Friday saying that the security risk does not arise from a flaw in its rights management tool. So even though they have a product that allows you to download viruses, it's not a flaw.
Well, they're digitally signed and managed viruses.
Yep. Right, exactly. Exactly. You can fix that by turning
controlled
the security settings on Internet Explorer to high, which means, of course, you can't do anything else either, but at least you won't get those viruses. There is no way to automatically force the user to run the malicious software, Microsoft said. This function is not a security vulnerability. There you are.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there is an unpatched hole in Internet Explorer web browser that could allow a remote attacker to bypass security warnings and download malicious content onto vulnerable systems. The hole affects Internet Explorer version 6 and above, including the version released with Windows XP Service Pack 2. The attackers can bypass warnings designed to inform the users when a file is being passed to their computer using a specially crafted HTML web document. There is no patch available for the new hole. Microsoft is advising Internet Explorer users to avoid clicking on links.
Yes, sir. There's a patch. You don't use it.
Right. It's called Firefox.
Firefox, Netscape,
I'll say
Opera.
It. Nobody else will.
Yeah.
There is, however, a fix for a critical hole in the HTML help ActiveX control. So if you haven't done the recent Microsoft updates, you must. And that's about it. There is a new security subscription service that's going to be available. Not a lot of news on it right now. It's codenamed A1, but you'll be able to get their security software on a subscription service, which is kind of wonderful, I suppose. All right, that's it for the news. And we're going to move on to the phones. Our first caller today is Frank from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. When I click on Nick at soundbites.org,
yeah,
what I get is this page cannot be found. And yet, maybe 10 minutes later, I won't have any problem.
Does it happen to other URLs you type, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a problem we've been hearing on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
What operating system are you running?
XP.
Thank you. Because everyone I've been talking to say it's only a Mac problem.
No.
Apple released a patch to help address this problem in System 1037. What's happening is that the internet has run out of addresses, just like we ran out of area codes a few years ago. And all the phone companies around the world had to get together and implement a new area code scheme. There is a new internet address numbering scheme being implemented on the internet, IPv6, if anyone's interested. And that allows for more addresses. The problem is, while some sites may be updated, other sites may not be updated. So when you click on a link, your web browser asks your internet provider, what's the address for the computer in this link? Your internet provider may not look it up fast enough because it's getting confused between the IPv4 and the IPv6.
And you get a timeout. Yeah.
So you get a timeout or server can't be found or something like that.
There's also the fact that what's happening is that the internet is so crowded with things like spam that you often find that the thing times out simply because a packet got lost somewhere.
Right.
Somewhere in the mass of spam on the internet.
So if you click that same link again in a few seconds, it'll work because by then the timeout has timed in, and the request finally makes it back to your browser.
I can copy and paste it, no problem.
But
because during that amount of time, you've gotten through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a timing issue.
Okay.
It's a real problem all over the internet right now, and there isn't much that we as individuals, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, Apple addressed the problem by increasing the timeout.
Right.
It'll wait longer before it gives you that error
and
message.
And the thing of it is you got to also remember, I mean, a lot of these folks, you know, some of their servers, you know, I mean, just because newer technology comes out and everything else, they're not always quick to upgrade some of their servers and everything else, but the volume of people getting on is constantly increasing.
Yeah, this...
So it's just putting more burden on older equipment.
Right.
And you're going to get a traffic jam somewhere.
One thing you have to remember is that the internet is not run by anybody. Everybody gets their piece of it. And if you want to put up a DNS server, that's a service to the community, but very few people are going to buy brand new equipment to do it with.
Yeah, this past Tuesday, the internet got really, really bad when Apple posted the QuickTime video of Jobs' keynote address. So hundreds of thousands of Mac users all over the country were downloading this two-hour video,
right?
And it was really slow. Yeah.
Well, and that's true. That's true in general. I blamed the email, but there's also all the P2P people who are downloading all the latest movies and all the latest videos and all the latest songs.
A new Linux release comes out.
Everyone downloads it. It gets pretty bad out there. There are days when you can fly through the internet, and there are days when it's just impossible. Generally,
so
I find that at 3 a.m. the internet is pretty fast.
Well, the problem is it's the middle of the day somewhere.
Right.
Always the middle of the day.
Right, depends
somewhere.
On where you're going as to whether or not it's fast at any
so
given time.
Yeah, wait
day,
10 right. seconds, click it again, it'll probably work.
Right. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Frank. I wish we had a better answer for you, but hey, it's the internet. Our next caller.
The internet is full. Go away.
The internet is full. Go away. I told you I went to one of the early internet meetings, the groups that put together the internet. And one of the guys said, in those days when there were only like 11 people on the internet total, we were talking about whether or not to let non-government, non-educational people onto the internet, to let the rabble come in and play.
FidoNet.
The rest of us.
Right. We were all on FidoNet, and I ran FidoNet hubs for a while. But I was at this meeting, and this guy was selling T-shirts. I wish I'd bought one. I did buy one. I wish I still had one. That said, the internet is full. Go away.
But you're on internet too, so we all hate you.
Yes, I am. I'm on internet too, which means I've got gigabit connections everywhere on earth. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to connect to. And RIT has set it up so that anytime you try to go anywhere, it tries over internet 2 first.
Cool. Yeah.
So that if it can make a connection over internet 2, you always get the fastest connection you can get. So when I download the latest Linux distribution or the latest video or whatever I'm downloading, I hear this huge sucking sound, and all of a sudden it's on my hard drive. It's really, really wonderful. But there will be Internet 2 for everybody someday. And
when Internet 3 comes out for education and military.
Exactly.
They're already on Internet 27 for the military.
Well, they're talking about putting up their own internet, and the heck with the rest of us.
Well, that was the whole purpose originally, is distributed computing, so the computing of the military could survive a nuclear attack.
Exactly. Well, listen, that song tells us that it's time to take another quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright. Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbite.
We are professionals.
Who are you?
He saw me swinging it around, and he still couldn't get out of the way.
Let's try that again. I'm Rob Linton.
No, all right. Fat lip. If you've ever seen the microphones, almost any radio studio, they're on gimbals, so they swing around pretty easily. Rob just swung it right into his face, smacked himself in the mouth with the microphone. This is a professional. This is what he does for a living.
About getting up close to the mic.
And he couldn't get out of the way of his own microphone. I just wish we had that on video. It was good. Oh, you're starting to get a little...
No, I am not stopping.
Thing there? That's very interesting.
Well, see, it's hard to tell with that fuzz on his chin.
I know. He's doing the
at least mine's not gray.
The Norville... He's trying to do the Norville Rogers thing now is what he's trying to... Shaggy. Oh. From Scooby-Doo?
Yeah, I know.
His real name. No one knows his real name.
Yep.
You just he's got this little chin spinach thing going here.
Spinach?
And about in another spinach. In another.
It's one of those woolly caterpillars.
I think they're fuzzier.
Once you do puberty, they'll fill right in. Not a problem.
You know, people want to talk about computers, not my chin fuzz.
You sure?
Yeah.
You're absolutely certain of that?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We'll go back to talking about computers.
Next one week's poll.
Yeah. Next week's poll. Would you rather hear about computers or Rob Linton's chin spinach? before we get back to the phones, I do want to address something that somebody wrote to me in a letter earlier this week about how we talk about a lot about Microsoft's security holes. We don't talk about anybody else's. There are a lot of other security holes out on the net. For example, this week, Google had two of them, one in their Gmail online mail system and one in Frugal, which is their comparison shopping thing. But both of them were fixed within about an hour. It's not news.
Yeah.
Probably because they're Unix based.
Right. Well, but they've got people who jump in and fix them. There were a plethora of tiny little problems and not all of them security fixes, of course, but a lot of patches and updates to a bunch of Linux programs. But they're fixed within an hour.
Yeah, one of the really...
It's not news.
And one of the really neat things about the Unix community is that the person who finds the bug usually fixes it himself and says, "Hi, I found this. Here's the fix."
Exactly. So that by the time anybody knows about it, it's a fix. It's a non-issue anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Microsoft world, it can take days, weeks, even months before a fix is available. And so people need to know so that they can protect themselves because the software writers are not protecting them for them. And that's the reason we talk about them, not to gloat about Microsoft, but to help protect the end user.
Yep, that's our goal.
I can't even believe I had to say that.
One other thing, since you're mentioning various issues and that, as you know, we take offline questions once in a while. We try to get to them as much as I can. Yeah,
don't expect it though; it's not a promise.
Well, that's what the forums are for. Someone else may know the answer before we get to it.
Joseph Burham from Newark, New York, sent me an email. And I'd like to answer his question because it was kind of an interesting one. But, Joe, you forgot to put in a correct email address so I could email you back. So if you want to try again, we'll see what we can do for you. But like Nick said, just alone this week, I went through quite a few emails. And, you know, I try to get to as many as I can, but I got a life, too.
We all got lives.
Yeah, like Steve said, that's what the forums are for, too. So.
Yep. All right, we're going to go back to the phones, speaking of our lives. And our next caller is Tom from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have an iMac, and I'm connected to the Internet with a cable modem. And I have a router between the cable modem and the computer. And I just wondered if there's any additional things other than the firewall that comes with the iMac. Is there any additional software or something I should have?
Not specifically. A lot of Mac users that share files with Windows users like to have an antivirus program because it will catch a Windows virus and prevent you from inadvertently passing it on to another Windows friend.
Either through files or through email.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a Windows virus can't affect your Mac, but if you get a Windows virus in your email, you could manually forward that virus on to another Windows user.
Which is just not being a good net citizen.
Right. Well, I'm not compatible with Windows, so.
Well, if
you share email with Windows users, then that's all it takes.
Uh huh. So maybe additional virus protection? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Some people like to have an antivirus protection just to make sure they're clean from Windows viruses and don't accidentally send them on to somebody else.
Okay.
Norton Antivirus is the big one, or Apple sells the McAfee's Virax through their .Mac subscription service.
Right. Okay, so I'm okay as far as the way I'm connected and people breaking in or whatever you want to call it.
Right. Generally, they can't break in anyway. I've had my Mac public on the internet for years. No one's ever broken into it.
That
I know of, yeah. because part of the way the Mac works is you need a username and password. There's no default username and password. There's no default access to the computer. You have to create that for you.
Got it.
I did have a customer a couple of weeks ago. They had a Mac server that I turned on Windows file sharing so that their PC could get into it too. And for a couple of weeks, he started seeing these files pop up on his server. A Windows virus scanning the network found his Windows server and was trying to infect it.
Yep.
But it was a Mac, so it couldn't infect.
Right, right. Oh, you'd be amazed at the stuff I find in my Linux logs.
Yep.
Unbelievable. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wow. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Got a computer question? Call the boys at 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites, and we are back to your calls. We're going to talk to Kurt from Irondequoit. Welcome, Kurt. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Just noting the birthday of the personal computer this month. 1975, Popular Electronics was the announcement of the Altair 8800.
That's exactly right. It's this month.
All us great... Well, actually, it was last month that it came out,
right.
It was the really the first... usable personal computer, if you think about it.
Well,
the Mark 8
depends
was sort
who
of
you
like
talk
a microcontroller.
To.
Yeah,
yeah, that's you had to solder that one together, right?
Yeah, yeah, that was the one you had to build from parts.
And when the Apple came out in July, you could at least plug it into your television.
Right. The Digital Research, which was at the time called Galactic Digital Research, brought out this this article. They sent them a mock-up, which they put on their cover. And they sent them an article about this great thing, and he figured, well, you know, man, I have enough parts to build like 8 or 10 of them. That's probably all we'll have.
Yeah.
He had hundreds of orders the first day. Phone was ringing off the hook. So he would build some, send them out, get the payment, build the next set with that money, send them out, get the payment, build the next set.
And, that's pretty much how everybody worked back then.
Yeah,
yeah, it is. And people were willing to wait for months and months for their systems. And the interesting thing was I have a friend who has... an Altair 88.
Really?
Yeah. He's hoping to get it working soon.
Super.
He's almost finished building it. Some of the pieces haven't come yet.
Yeah.
He keeps telling me every time I see him, yeah, it's almost done.
Trying to get some
pretty
of
close.
Them.
Pretty close.
Yeah, they're saying the a lot of the early prototypes of the Apple I motherboard have been lost, and I guess serial number 3 was just lost in a fire last year.
Yeah.
So. It's getting sad. Yeah.
It is kind of sad. Thanks, Kurt. We appreciate you reminding us of our own history. It's a good thing to know. Our next caller, Keith from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
How you doing, guys? Great talking to you. I have three laptops, all HP, running XP, and a desktop Dell running 98. I'm on Frontier DSL, and I have a Linksys router.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem, you know, with anything coming in. The question is, it's a two-parter. Number one, these problems you're talking about, the holes and everything, am I still vulnerable with the router for the holes in XP when I'm using email?
Yes. Because the problem is that anything that is in email is automatically let through by your firewall. Otherwise, how would you get email?
Okay.
Now, well, the theory is that at least some of those things will be caught by your antivirus software if they're bringing in a virus with them. If, on the other hand, they're expecting you to click on a link, then you're on your own, because don't forget, not only does email come through your firewall fine, but so does the web. Otherwise, you wouldn't get anywhere.
Yeah, we generally say there's a suite of programs you need. You need a firewall, you need an antivirus program. You need
I've got the whole security tangle. The only thing I haven't done is put in Firefox, so I should probably add that on.
You probably should, and then you'll get a warning that says, this is a bad URL. Do you still want to open this document? And you can say no.
Okay. My main question was, if you have time for this, is I'm trying to figure out, I've networked one of the laptops to the desktop, but because one's 98 and one is XP, I have no trouble transferring files. But would I be able to install a CD-ROM game like Railroad Tycoon or Scrabble or something like this and play between two opposing systems, or would that be too many problems to overcome?
If the game supports both operating systems, it should work.
It should.
And the graphics card in the old 98 machine.
Yeah, a lot of times, though,
you
may not like playing like that, because especially in shooters, the X machine is so fast, you can turn and shoot somebody before the 98 machine even knows they're in front of you.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, if Railroad Tycoon is, of course, not a shooter, if you can, in fact, run it on both machines, if it will...
And I can. They both play... The ones I'm interested in all play well in the 98.
Okay, then you should be able to let them talk to each other. I believe with Railroad Tycoon, you can actually put in the exact IP address, the 129, the 198, the 192.168 number, and have them talk directly to each other.
Oh, great. Okay.
I think so, if I remember correctly.
Okay, then I'll have to go in and look. I just didn't want to waste my time, but I thought it was not going to work.
No, it should work. It should work fine.
We've got several customers that are rail fans, and one guy put together a DVD of his train set, you know, the whole giant thing in the basement. He's got a micro camera in the train, and then part of his DVD is the train's eye view going around the track and through the tunnels and everything. Cool. I fast-forward it, and it looks like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And you go, ah!
One thing he's going to... On that train program, though, he might have to get some of the updates for 98 based upon, you know, if he's running 98 second edition or just 98.
Right.
He probably should check into some of the updates for it.
Right. All right, listen, we're going to take a break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. More of your phone calls and the same sort of insanity you've just been listening to on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back. We missed you. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. We're
welcome back. We missed you.
We missed you. They were gone for a whole couple of minutes. It was bleak.
Brought a little tear to my eye.
Brought a little tear to your eye. Exactly
maybe
right.
That's
there
just
won't
the bump
be a dry seat
the
in
microphone.
The house. That must be it. Our next caller is Susan from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Susan. What's your question?
Yes. I have the pack 2 on the, is it AdaWare? And when I try to update it, there's a message that comes up saying that it doesn't have a signature. It doesn't have the publisher's signature. Should I not download that one?
No, that's okay to download. Microsoft's new security procedures in Service Pack 2 are a little overly paranoid. They require every developer in the universe to register with Microsoft.
Yeah, if you
and
don't,
that costs
you don't get
money.
That costs a lot of money. A
lot of money.
But we know that Lavasoft, the publishers of AdaWare, are a reputable company, and it's okay to install that.
Yeah.
Basically, that may pop up if something else tries to install. But if you know you're getting it from a reputable company, it's okay to install it anyway.
Okay. All right. That's great. Thank you.
Because I'm also seeing that with a lot of sometimes installing other devices.
Yeah.
They'll sit there and say, sorry, this didn't pass the Microsoft certification.
Yeah.
Do you want to continue or stop?
Well,
and you just say continue, and it works fine. It's just that, you know, Microsoft wants all those big bucks.
I get annoyed that the Windows security control panel thingy doesn't recognize Norton antivirus. I have to turn it off and say, I have an antivirus I'm managing myself.
Yeah, right.
Well, the two big Norton's ones are Norton and McAfee. You'd think Microsoft would know about that.
Yeah, no. But no, Norton, though, I have had a number of issues, both version 2004 and 2005, putting it on new machines.
Yeah, most of my clients are still running 2002.
It installs, and then you've got to go through at least three or four times of clicking check for updates.
Yeah.
And then it reboots.
It tells you to check again to make sure you get them all.
And you've got to keep going until you get no further updates.
Well, I wish they'd update their CDs more often. You buy the commercial box and the CD's a year old. The definitions are way out of date.
Yeah, but McAfee, I mean, I can sell that right now, and I can put that on a machine and no problems. I have not had a problem with McAfee. Norton, since version 2002, there have been numerous issues. Trying to get it to uninstall is a bear. And they've got documents after documents after documents on how to uninstall for this, do this, do this, depending on the error messages. McAfee, I just don't get it. I mean, I just don't get those error messages.
Right, right.
It works.
I admit it. I admit it. I agree with you. I also don't get them with AVG, which I use pretty regularly.
Another
myself.
One there. So, I mean, you know, it's scary.
It's scary, yep.
It is scary. But our next caller is hopefully not scary. It'll be Mark. From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hey, how's it going, gentlemen?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm actually in a dilemma here.
Uh-oh, a dilemma.
No, honestly, I'm 28, and I've never needed a computer, and I need a computer for a bunch of different things I like to do, and I need to know where is the best place I should get one. I mean, should I get a new one or used one? I'm really in a dilemma,
you come
honestly.
To the right
place,
Mark.
What do you want to do
Mark?
With it, Mark?
I want to, you know, kind of tinker with the internet, you know, email, you know, do some different job searching, things like that. Just general, you know, tinkering around with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, play some games on there, just basic stuff like that.
Well, let me suggest that you buy your machine locally.
Okay.
Particularly for a new user, buying your machine locally is best because you've got a face to look at if you've got a problem.
Okay.
And questions to ask before you buy it.
Right. Questions to ask before you buy it. You can put your hands on it. You can talk to the people. Now, my suggestion is we have two people right here on the panel who sell computers, and I personally vouch for how wonderful their service and support is.
What places of business are those?
Okay. You've got me, Dave Enright, and I run Enright PC Management.
Okay.
And we're on 70 Empire Boulevard.
Uh-huh.
And then Mac Ave, 439 Monroe Avenue downtown, or 20 Assembly Drive in Mendon. We mostly sell Macs, but we also sell PCs as well. And if you've been listening to the show a while, you may have heard a lot of the issues that PCs have. So new users especially that don't want to have to fight with their computer, we'd like to recommend Macs.
And there are a number of other very reputable dealers in town.
Yep.
My suggestion is this is going to be a pretty big purchase.
Around.
So shop around. Go into the places. Talk to the people. Ask to talk to the techs. See how you feel about them as people, because you're going to be dealing with them for a long time.
The only one thing that I ask of folks.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, since I'm, you know, sell computers and that is when you go around, you know, comparing prices, make sure you're comparing apples to apples.
Right.
Because I get folks coming in and say, well, I can go get this system over here.
It's $500 cheaper.
Yeah.
You're gouging me.
Yeah.
No, and you're not getting as good a system.
Yeah, right. You've got to see what components are going in there. I mean, I can use some, you know, get the price down by only putting 128 mega memory in it.
Or using cheap RAM or a cheaper video card.
I mean, I use name brand stuff. That's why on my systems, I can still offer the 3-year warranty. It's a 3-year limited warranty and 1 year on the parts.
So, Mark, it's going to take you a little bit of walking around and a little bit of thinking to do it, but you can certainly find a pretty dang good deal locally. And leaving your money here in the community is never a bad thing, never a bad thing at all. Speaking of the community, we're going to turn you over to one of our great news people. Ms. Brandenburg is ready to do the news. She'll be magnificent. And then we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob, this is the microphone, Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. We'll be back after the news with a whole lot more sound bites right here on 1180 WHAM. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. News, information, all kinds of good stuff, and then a whole lot more sound bites coming up very, very shortly.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. But before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we have a poll. Last week's poll was about Microsoft antivirus software. And the choices were... No, seriously. Don't think I want to be first, thanks. Can't wait, woohoo, and I don't run Windows, you insensitive clod. 47% of you didn't find it all that impressive in the least. In fact, only 19 people out of 358 of you voted on this poll, making it number 53 on the all-time hit list. Only 19 of you, that's 5%, can't wait. Now, the rest of you either don't run Windows, don't want to be first, or just think the whole thing is a joke. This week's poll was sent in by one of our faithful listeners named Ken. And Ken's poll talks about the most recent update to your computer. We talk about updating all the time, but the truth is there are a lot of different things you can update. Mm-hmm. So this mentions at least some of them. My antivirus software, my spyware applications, patches, updates for my operating system, updates to Internet Explorer, updates to other applications, my resume, which I thought was pretty funny, and my whole computer, you insensitive clod. We'll talk about it later. It's not something you want to mention on here.
You have to ask. You must be one.
Boom. Or you could be a clod hopper. Anyway, the so far there's 84 votes, and... my antivirus software is winning out over patches, which is just edging out my whole computer, you insensitive clod. Once you're done putting in your poll choice, below that you'll see a yellowish box. And if you click in that box on Give Us Your Opinion, you'll be taken to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com.
Don't!
Where you can then put in a little more data, because I realize that for many of you, you're verbose sons of guns, and just clicking a button and making a choice isn't enough for you. So
do it for
you me. Get to voice your opinion right here on the Ask Nick website. That's asknick.com. And he is good. And you can put in your opinion. We've already got 9 of them on there already. And
are
actually they actually are on topic this time, which is pretty interesting. Pretty rare, actually. And once you're done with that, come on back over to Soundbites and join us in the forum. Some of the coolest people on earth are in our forums, and I'm always delighted to get in there and deal with them. Haven't done much of that this week because I've been very busy with my classes, but I don't care. I'm talking about the website. You don't like it? That's a problem for you. I tried to ignore you.
But you're not.
I was like, is he hearing this?
I'm hearing it. I was just ignoring it because you were being rude. I was talking.
He's being an insensitive clod.
Being an insensitive clod. You see? Now you know what it was. What it is. All right. Just to make Rob happy, we'll talk a little bit. Oh, no, wait. We'll go back. We'll go back to the phones, and we'll talk to Tim from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hey, Tim. Surprise, surprise. My Microsoft Outlook is, when the messages come in, they come in. I click on them. They're in the view pane down below. The minute I let off on that, they're gone. They're deleted. Nowhere to be found. Any ideas?
You probably have your system set to view unread messages. So as soon as you read it, it hides, because now it's not unread anymore. And that's in one of the view menus somewhere.
Yeah, under
view show.
It's gotta be in the tools.
Show only unread messages, or show unread messages, and you have to uncheck it.
Yeah, it's in the internet security. I think.
This is just in the view preferences.
Right, of Outlook. You go into tools option.
No, in the view menu. I'm pretty sure it is, because we've run into this with quite a few customers.
Don't use it.
Yeah.
That's why.
Is this Outlook or Outlook Express?
Outlook. Yeah, Outlook.
Okay.
My wife's working the mouse while you're talking.
Yeah, I don't even think I have it on this machine. So
yeah, one of the menu commands somewhere is to show only unread messages.
Yeah.
So as soon as you read it, it won't show
it
anymore.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah,
it's not really deleted. It's just hidden.
Okay.
So you got to look around in there. Matter of fact, you can always go into while you're in Outlook, go to the help button there and do a search within help on how to unhide messages.
He's doing that as we speak.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Okay, I'm sorry we can't give you the straight thing, but
especially
I just don't
Outlook
have it on this machine.
Even
yeah.
Fewer folks use that. I mean, it's usually Outlook Express.
Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Well, gentlemen, I'm one of those guys that knows enough about computers to get themselves in a lot of trouble.
Okay, thanks for calling. Our next caller. Okay, go ahead, Dan.
Anyways, I've been trying to install a wireless adapter in an older ThinkPad, and it has XP on it. It's 2002 version with Service Pack 1. And I've installed the software, and what I'm getting up when I go into Device Manager is there's no dividers installed for this device. And then when I go into the driver properties, you know, it's telling me that it's not digitally signed.
Right.
Now, I have installed the same software in a newer computer that I just bought without any problems. And the only difference when I'm loading the software is when I load it into the older ThinkPad, there is a warning that comes up or saying that this driver is not digitally signed.
Right.
And so, you know, I've gone past that point, and then you come up with that other message that you see from Microsoft, you know, that you're informed in the instructions to just bypass.
Right.
But again, just prior to that, and it only happens when I'm installing it on the ThinkPad, there's a warning saying that this driver is not digitally signed.
Well, that just means they didn't pay Microsoft the ungodly amount of money to sign their software.
Yeah, but again, it doesn't happen when I load it into the other computer.
Yeah, but have you looked up on the web for updated drivers for 2000 for that device?
It's Windows 2000?
Pardon me?
The ThinkPad is Windows 2000?
No, the ThinkPad is XP.
Right.
It was put in 2002.
Oh. Right. And what's the other machine?
The other machine is a brand new Dell that I just got.
With Service Pack 2 on it.
Yeah, it has Service Pack 2, correct.
Yeah, the Service Pack 2 is where that digitally signed requirement starts popping up more and more often.
On the a laptop, though, is that Service Pack 1 at least on that?
It is Service Pack 1.
The first thing you need to do is to check with the vendor of the wireless adapter and find out if indeed it works with older ThinkPads. ThinkPads were pretty doggone fussy about what they take. Talk to them about whether or not it's supposed to work and if they have a different driver or there is something you need to turn on or off. In the BIOS, there are an amazing number of things you have
FAQs
to tweak.
When I've discussed that with them, they're telling me that it's something in the operating system, and it's something that I need to talk to the vendor, like the person I bought the computer from. So I'm not getting a lot of help.
But yeah, that gets you off the phone.
Yeah.
They want you to take it to someone and pay them to fix it, to fix their confusion. It's one of the issues in the PC world is that you've got so many different vendors who make the computer, the chips, the components, the OS, the software. No one knows whose fault it is, basically. So there's a lot of pass the blame. And what happens with Dave and I as service providers is that we've had to learn everything.
Yeah.
So
right.
We can figure out.
Well, that's another reason to go to a local person. But to solve Dan's problem here, my suggestion is that first you start with looking to see if there are updated drivers from the manufacturer of the wireless adapter. Check their website. If that doesn't work, my suggestion is to try a different wireless adapter from a different company.
Or if he's over there, check the FAQs. FAQs, sometimes people have, you know, the same problem as you, and they might have a workaround for it. So check those out, too.
Right.
And I found the command for our previous caller with the Outlook problems. You go to the View menu, choose Current View, choose Customize Current View, click on the Filter button, click on the More Choices button, and uncheck only those items that are unread. So somehow, somewhere along the way, it's filtering, so it's only showing unread messages.
And luckily, yeah. At some point, this will all be up on our website so that you can find that and read it from there rather than having to actually write all that down. Our next caller is Chris from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I have a kind of a, I'd like your opinion on something. I got a new Dell shortly before Christmas, and one of the things that they offer is you can set up multiple accounts, and I wanted to know your opinion about that. You know, whether we whether I should do that or not. I've already done it, but now I'm thinking about going back to one account.
Well, it depends on exactly what your circumstances are. For example, you're talking about accounts, login accounts for the operating
right.
system.
Right. Yeah.
If you have only one machine, and you have children, and you want to keep them away from your stuff. And you particularly want to make them just users so they can't load stuff onto the system and give you viruses with every stupid thing they download, then, yeah, you absolutely want to use multiple accounts.
Okay. Where this comes into play is now this machine came with WordPerfect, and I want to load an Office suite. I'm actually thinking about loading OpenOffice, but I noticed that in there it said that you have to do it a certain way if you have multiple users.
Sure.
Otherwise, not everybody will be able to access. In other words, I think you almost have to load it four times if you do it the usual way.
I think the latest one says gives you the choice. I don't really remember anymore.
It does.
Multi-users.
Yeah, a lot of software, while you're installing it, will say, do you want this software to be accessible to this user or all users?
And you simply say all users.
Yeah.
Now, you have to install it as the administrator.
Right.
But once you've done that, it's available to everybody.
And then you can always put a shortcut out on their desktop.
Okay. It's especially handy with smaller children. I have a separate account for my six-year-old son. It's got just his game icons on it. He can't accidentally delete my files or get into the applications folder and accidentally delete stuff. He'll delete his game icons accidentally all the time, and I just put them back. But
right.
Yeah.
So it's really a good idea, particularly if you have kids.
Okay. All right. I just didn't want to make sure. You know, I didn't want to get too far down that road and find out that every time I load software, I've got have problems whenever I load it. And it doesn't sound like that's the case. But the software is smart enough to recognize multiple accounts and then ask the right questions.
Yep-er. You're on the right track there, Chris. Rest assured. And rest assured that we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Two. This is Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM. From PCs to Macs, these guys can help with any computer question you may have. So call the boys now at 222-1180, the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Back to the phones. We're going to talk to Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, good afternoon. I've got a question in regards to attempting to either load or remove software. I'm attempting to, I did upgrade to the XP Professional. My scanner hasn't worked since then. Remove the scanner.
From what? What did you upgrade from?
I was at a Windows 98.
Yep. Go ahead.
Well, when I say upgrade, it was a new installation. In any case, the scanner hasn't worked. I've removed it through the normal processes. There is one program still left out there. It's called HP Disk Memories. I go to attempt to remove that through the add remove programs, and it comes up with a message screen telling me that the Windows installer service could not be accessed and telling me that it's either not correctly installed or that it's my system's running in a safe mode. I am not running in a safe mode.
You might have to install it and then try to uninstall it.
What it sounds like is it was partially installed or partially uninstalled and then didn't finish. And consequently, it's in the list but not running. And when you try to uninstall it, it can't find the components. And so it says, I'm sorry, this is not right.
Now you're talking about the HP Disk Memories.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I've attempted to reload from the CD. And it comes up with a couple of error code numbers, and all referring back to the Windows installer service.
Yeah, that might have to be a manual remove.
Well, you also may need to download a newer driver from HP's website.
I've done that as well.
Work either.
Yeah.
No, I've worked on this for 3 months.
Now, as far as your scanner, it's a well-known fact, even back as far as Windows 98, Windows has never supported scanners very well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've supported everything else, and hello, the scanners have been out longer than, say, CD-ROM drives and burners. But yet, it's always been one piece of equipment that's always been missed. Now, what you're going to have to do there is uninstall it. HP
and you may have
I've already done that.
Universal.
You may have to find a manual uninstall instruction.
Yeah, but HP, though, even if it's still, remnants are still there, but it's not listed, HP does have a universal scanner driver that'll work with most cases. If you put in your particular scanner and tell it you're using XP, they'll show you a driver, because I just had to do this for a friend of mine. He's got an HP 5P. And it was working fine on his 98 machine, but when we went to do it on XP, of course, it didn't like it, so we had to go up and get universal drivers.
I have no problem with my scanner at home. Mm-hmm. It's the office scanner that I have a problem with, and they're both on XP professionals.
But are they the same scanners?
Yeah, identical. Identical.
But what version of Windows XP are you running in the office versus...
Well, it is the latest XP version, because I have
Service Pack 2 on both?
Yes.
But again, even though you might be the same Windows and everything else, it could be different hardware. See, this
is
another thing that starts to play in place. You know, you could have a Pentium 4, say 1.8 gigahertz at home, and then you go to the office, it could be an AMD chip or who knows what. So they're definitely not the exact same.
How would I go? Where would I find the manual uninstall then?
At the HP support site for that.
Over at the HP support.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's pretty much what you're going to have to do. Manually uninstall both of those products. Again, they'll both be on the HP website. And from there, you can then go back and reinstall using the regular stuff. Our next caller, Peter from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Peter. What's your question?
Yes, my question is similar to Bob's question in that I'm running a Windows 98 SE. And whenever I attempt to load a new program, I start having problems with other programs. And I don't know whether it's the 98 SE's not accepting these new programs as it should, or should I upgrade?
A lot of the new programs, Peter, really require XP. And what a lot of them do, even the older programs, if they're games in particular, they tend to load their own drivers. And those drivers conflict with the drivers that are built into the system. And they're optimized for that one game, but they may not work at all well with other programs.
No games.
Okay, but it is, but like I said,
programs.
It's also true of other programs as well. Particularly games, but other programs do it too. So what you end up with is conflicting things in terms of device drivers and DLLs, which are link libraries of common program bits.
At the core of this question is, should I get rid of the Windows 98 SE and upgrade to XP, and is there a way that I can just take all the files and programs that are on my hard drive now and transfer them to the new computer without having the
problems
that Bob's talking about with, you know, running programs that are working now, but...
Yes and no.
Yeah.
You can certainly upgrade 98 to XP. That's possible.
If
the system will handle it. The big thing that you have to remember is when you upgrade 98 to XP, you have to make sure you have all the latest XP drivers available for every bit of hardware on your system. And you have to make sure that your registry is clean, and you want to make sure you've done a serious backup. Safer is to do a brand new install of the system and wipe everything out. But in order to do that, you've got to make sure you've backed up all your documents and that you have the originals for your programs to reinstall them all.
Some of them I may not, because they've been on there for years.
Right. Well, then, like I said, you can take the chance, but the possibility is that there may be a problem.
A third option is getting a new computer, and Microsoft has the file settings transfer wizard that will transfer all of your files.
Files and settings.
But your applications, again, you'll need to reinstall. But if the applications are that old, you're probably better off getting newer versions.
And they might not work on, and they might not work if they on were XP DOS,
anyway. Yeah.
They might, if they were the old 16-bit or 32-bit DOS, they might not work.
Yeah, that's one of the gotchas when you come up to the new operating system. Some old programs just simply don't work well at all. There's nothing that can be done about that.
So when you try to mix an old program and a new program, it doesn't. So a lot of people will end up with two computers: an old program for the old computer for the old programs, a new computer for the new programs.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, like I had one client that had an old DOS program, and he's got to keep it around just for that basis because it's an old 8-bit DOS program. It literally boots up in an old DOS window. I hadn't seen that in years.
Yep.
But it works.
I have a friend who uses a couple of old DOS programs for his business, and they just don't make new versions. The old one does everything you want.
Yeah.
So he keeps a DOS system sitting around to do that. That makes sense to me. Listen, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton for keeping us on the straight and narrow. At least the straight, if not on the narrow, at least. I'm not sure about that part. We will be back here next week at 11 o'clock, so please join us on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.